listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
New York Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal has been examining the cost of health care in this country in a series called Paying Till It Hurts. Her most recent articles focus on prescription medications. The first, The Soaring Cost of a Simple Breath, looks at how prescription medications are many times more expensive in this country than they are elsewhere. And the second, As Drug Costs Rise, Bending the Law is One Remedy, reveals that an increasing number of Americans are getting prescription medications from Canada and other countries where they're significantly cheaper than they are here, even though it may be illegal to do so. I'm glad to welcome Elizabeth Rosenthal back to our show. Hello.
Hi, thanks.
And asthma is the most common chronic disease and affects about 40 million Americans. Is it one of the more expensive ones to manage?
Now it is. It used to be very cheap to manage it, but about 5 years ago, many of the inhalers went off the market because they contained environmentally dangerous substances. And when they were put back on in a different form, they were under new patents and very, very expensive.
And one of those albuterol, that's a lot more expensive than it was a decade ago.
Yeah, I took albuterol as a kid and as a college kid, and I still have an inhaler that occasionally I use. And it was, you know, under $10 for years and years, and there were, you know, a bunch of generics. And now they're all brands, and they're all $50 to $100.
Do we know how much they cost to make?
Presumably pennies, but I'm not exactly sure, because now what you're paying for, in theory, is not so much the medicine inside of these inhalers is all old and off patent, but they're put in a new kind of delivery device. So how much did it cost to change the propellant? I don't know, but at this point, you know, that's not what we're paying for.
And how much do they cost elsewhere? For example, Canada, which our closest neighbor.
Yeah, $10.
Mexico.
$5, you know, and we heard from a lot of people who live near the borders who say everyone here goes over the border to get their medicines, and they're a little worried about customs agents. So sometimes they bring American pill bottles or American boxes and put the new meds in the box and bring it back across the border.
Are most of these medications covered by basic insurance?
They are, which is part of how they can be priced so high, because if, for example, the two of the popular asthma inhalers, Symbicort and Advair, which are more for adults, they're priced around $300, right?
How many treatments?
For a month. And, you know, this is not – and they work really well.
So, but that's $10 a day.
Right. But you're not paying $10 a day. So maybe you have a prescription plan that says – $30 copay. So you're not very sensitive to the fact that it's costing our system or your company $300. So that's part of the way we get away with having these ridiculous prices, because people don't feel them. But they may feel them more and more as time goes on, because these prices in the end are tending to go up. Insurance plans have higher and higher copays and deductibles. They're excluding more drugs. So, you know, P.S., don't be surprised if every January 1st you're finding, holy moly, you know, my prescription drug costs have just bumped up or doubled.
You also say holy moly?
Yeah, I do. Sorry. what you're allowed to say on the air.
Are there generic versions of asthma drugs available at reduced costs?
In other countries, but not in this country.
Because we reformulated them here.
Well, they had to be reformulated in much of the world, because the chlorofluorocarbon they contain is not good for the environment. But the thing is, in other parts of the world, the brands are much cheaper, and anyway, so there's not the incentive to make generics, but also the pathway to making generics is much smoother. Here, we worry so much about the business side, protecting patents, protecting intellectual property rights, that we lose sight of the patients.
Are the generics that are available elsewhere exactly the same as the ones that we're spending so much money on, $300 a month?
Well, not only are the generics are maybe in a different, slightly different inhaler, but they have to be essentially other drug regulators, like in England and Canada, who are no slouches, have said, yes, this is equivalent. But the U.S. has not allowed that.
There are people who are concerned about generics because, as you point out, the delivery systems aren't always the same. And even though the active ingredients are the same, they may not have the same effect if the delivery system is different. Also, with generics, you aren't always sure which generic you're getting, so there can be an uneven process, even though because of the delivery systems.
That's true, and that's a legitimate worry. What I want to point out, though, is that for the inhalers, the cheap product overseas is not a generic. It's the exact same brand that you're buying here often, exact same package, same everything.
You're right that prescription drugs account for 10% of the country's $2.7 trillion a year healthcare spending. Is that because Americans take more prescription medications than people in other countries?
No, our high spending habits are because we pay more for everything we do. In fact, patients in other countries, there are many other countries that take more prescriptions than we do. We use more generics, which in theory, percentage-wise, should make us thriftier. But in fact, we spend more because we pay more for everything we take.
And despite the fact that there are generics on the market for many drugs, in 2012, didn't the cost of both generics and brand name drugs go up?
Yes. In the U.S., the price of both generics and brand name drugs went up. Brand names by 25%, something pretty astronomical. Generics by less, I think about 5%. But the point is really in other countries, there's a legal mandate that medicines get cheaper every year as they get older because where's the intellectual property? It's tapering off. The investment has tapered off over time.
And in this country, are drug companies, big pharma, able to set their own prices?
Yeah, I think the big difference, one way that the U.S. is really unique, is that we have no large-scale negotiation over drug prices. So we have no national intervention on drug pricing. In some countries, governments do it. In other countries, there's a large-scale national negotiation. Here, it's hundreds of insurers and pharmacies all negotiating their own deals.
Well, how do they explain the high cost of these drugs? You say sometimes they cost pennies to make. Mm-hmm. Drugs like Pulmicort and Albuterol, which are used to treat asthma, are used by lots and lots of people. You would think that just volume would have brought the prices down.
Well, and it has in other countries. The one thing that is legitimate is, you know, the drug companies say these costs pay for research and development and that the American consumer is bearing the costs of their research and development because they charge these low prices everywhere else and, hey, someone's got to pay for it. So there's cost shifting. It's not you're paying for the R&D for your inhaler. You're paying for the R&D, in fact, for some new cancer drug or some. And there's a degree of legitimacy in that. The question is, how much are they using for research and development for really novel drugs? And how much is going to kind of protect their patents, to advertising, which P.S. is unique also in the United States? How much is going to marketing? How much is going to taking an old drug and putting it in a new inhaler so you can keep the price high?
So in other countries, you don't see ads for drugs, which then have all of these disclaimers telling you that if you take it, you're going to go blind or die or think of committing suicide?
No. The only other country that allows direct-to-consumer prescription drug advertising is New Zealand, and that's been a hot topic of debate there. My particular favorite is the low-tea advertising that we see everywhere now. But we are unique in allowing that kind of advertising, and the fact that it is everywhere on TV and in every magazine tells you that it, in fact, works, and it does boost spending.
There was a time when it was looked down upon, wasn't it? Doctors weren't allowed to advertise for their services either, and now we have all these doctors advertising on the subways.
Yeah, I mean, direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising used to be illegal in the United States, and I think it was in the, I can't remember if it was the 80s or 90s that it became legal. When I trained as a doctor, it was illegal. When surveys of doctors indicate that most do not like it and do not approve and feel that it leads to overspending and worse care, but that's not what it's about.
My guest is New York Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal, who's been writing a series of articles under the overall title, Paying Till It Hurts. We're talking about two recent ones, the soaring cost of a simple breath, and as drug costs rise, bending the law is one remedy. Well, are doctors complaining about the high cost of drugs for their patients?
Well, the funny thing is doctors tend not to know about it until their patient comes back and says, whoa, I just went to the pharmacy to get these shots or these, my antibiotic, and it was $250. So doctors are starting to be more energized about it, but they have very little choice. You know, they try, but they often don't know which is cheapest, and it kind of fluctuates a lot month to month. So it's like keeping track of which laundry detergent is cheap as I'm writing the prescription for it. It's hard to know.
Well, some drugs available only by prescription in this country are available over the counter in other parts of the world. Who controls whether a drug should be available only by prescription?
Well, the FDA on that front is passive. The drug company comes to them and says, we would like to switch this to over-the-counter status. And frankly, when a drug costs $300, they have very little incentive to switch it to over-the-counter status because you're not going to pick up a bottle off a pharmacy shelf and to see a price tag of $300 and say, oh, I'll buy that. And I had a funny experience while I was writing this series. Some Spanish tourists came into my local pharmacy in New York, and they wanted to buy Zovirax, which is a cream for viral infections of the mouth. And, the pharmacist said, first, you need a prescription. And second, that's going to cost you $150. And they were like, wait a second, in Madrid, I buy that for 4 euros for, over the counter. And that's a marketing and business decision in this country.
Well, why would that kind of drug or an asthma drug even require a prescription? Can they be abused?
No, every drug has side effects, including Tylenol and aspirin and Advil. So, there is a potential problem with any drug you can take. But I think the argument has been pointed out frequently that many of the things that are on prescription are actually safer than many of the things you can go into a pharmacy and buy. So it's really not about safety, particularly with some of these older drugs. I mean, with asthma, there used to be this drug called Primatene Mist. It was mm-hmm. the one over-the-counter asthma treatment. It was basically pure adrenaline. It was much more dangerous than any of the prescription inhalers, but it was cheap and it was over-the-counter. So a lot of asthmatics, including me, knew that if the good stuff ran out, the safe stuff, they could always run to a pharmacy and get a little Primatene Mist. But I can tell you, it's adrenaline, so it makes you really racy. It's if you have a bad heart, it's not safe. There are a lot of reasons why you would want that to be on a prescription and the prescription inhaler to be over the counter.
And is that the only over the counter asthma drug available?
It no longer exists. The asthma inhaler.
I was hoping to get a little adrenaline once in a while.
Now, Primatene Mist, as a result of this CFC phase out, went off the market. So,
when you were here to discuss the high costs of colonoscopies and of hip and knee replacements, you brought up the fact that sometimes costs are high because insurance companies are willing to pay the higher prices. Is that also true with prescription drugs?
Yeah, that's true too. There's a lot of bargaining and jockeying that goes on, and the prescription, the insurance company now mostly farms out the pharmacy to what's called a pharmaceutical benefits manager, and they may negotiate a little bit with the pharmacy, but their ultimate weapon is charging you a high copay or saying, we won't pay for it, which leaves patients in the lurch.
What about the pharmacies that have great buying power, like a Costco? Do they wind up getting these for less than the rest of than my local pharmacy?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing that's going on now, and we'll have to see where this trend leads economically, is some of the big chain pharmacies have realized selling cheap prescription drugs is a good marketing tool for them. So now you'll see all of these, Target $4 prescriptions for, an antibiotic or $4 prescriptions for a blood pressure med, all these chronic meds. Now, those tend to be the older meds, probably not the ones you're on, but maybe, I saw Ambien over the, for $8. They're getting people in the door by offering cheap prescriptions. But that can help you a lot if you happen to need the medicines that are on sale this month or this year.
You mentioned earlier that reformulation, because the other drugs, the earlier versions, were not acceptable, has led to new patents. But don't drug companies also do something called pay for delay?
Yeah, there are a lot of different there are so many different ways that our pharmaceuticals end up costing more. They can reformulate. If I see that my drug is going, I mean, the most kind of somewhat absurd example in the story was there was a very popular birth control pill that was about to go off patent. So the maker of this birth control pill pulled it off the market a year early and introduced a chewable version. Now, who needs what woman, sexually active woman, needs a chewable birth control pill? I don't know. But it reestablished a patent on that medicine. I heard from a lot of my gynecologist friends it created havoc because, you know, 22-year-olds, they want to swallow their pills. They don't want to chew it. And they didn't know, could they swallow it? Also, there is this pay-for-delay scheme, which, and I call it a scheme because it is, it's being contested in the courts, and we'll see what happens, is if I'm a brand pharmaceutical maker and I see this generic drug maker coming down the pike, I can actually pay them to not put a generic on the market. Now, I'm not a business person, but it seems like people have told me that in other fields that would be, you know, anti-competitive and would not be allowed. But it is quite widely practiced now. There were dozens and dozens of pay-for-delay cases in 2012.
Talking with Elizabeth Rosenthal of the New York Times about why drugs costs are so high and why some people are breaking the law to get around it, we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. We are back with New York Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal, who has been running a year-long series. Is it going to last a year, or have you been finding so many things?
We'll see.
The overall title is Paying Till It Hurts. The two we are discussing is the soaring cost of a simple breath, and as drug costs rise, bending the law is one remedy. Let's talk about bending the law. Hmm. If I get in contact with a pharmacy in Canada, which is going to charge me a lot less for a prescription drug, send them the prescription, I'm breaking the law?
Well, it's really a gray area. Yes, it's technically illegal to do that, and the FDA has said they would not prosecute generally for – they give a long list of conditions, which are somewhat ambiguous, I would say, but generally less than a three-month supply. There are all these caveats about not available in the U.S., which, of course, most drugs that people mail order for are available in the U.S., just not at that price. But, you know, more and more people are doing it because – not because they want to, but because they can't afford the prices here.
Well, I mentioned that there are some large companies that can buy in bulk and save as a result. Well, probably the biggest medical service in this country is Medicare, right, and we're soon to have the Affordable Care Act. How come Medicare can't buy in large quantities and negotiate drug prices?
Well, in theory, they could, and that would create huge savings. But part of what President Obama gave away in the Affordable Care Act was the ability of Medicare to negotiate drug pricing. So the only really
that's why the drug companies were in support
right,
of it.
Right, in order to get the backing of the pharmaceutical world that was given away. The only organization that really negotiates drug prices in this country is the Army and the Veterans Administration. And prices, if you're in that system or you have a way to get your meds through the VA, you will get much cheaper prices.
You spoke with the parents of Abby and Hannah Hayes, two girls who both have asthma. How much do they spend on asthma medications each year, out of pocket and with insurance?
Well, out of pocket, they spend about $1,000, but they have what they call, you know, Cadillac insurance. They only see a very small part of their actual pharmaceutical bills. So without the actual payments would be in the $5,000 range for these two girls. And I should note that children's asthma medicines tend to be cheaper than adult asthma medicines. So the two adults would be spending even more.
Well, there's a whole bunch of different asthma medicines out there. Mm-hmm. Doesn't competition bring the prices down at all?
Well, in the inhaler realm, there aren't a bunch of medicines out there. There are a few, all on patent, and no, it doesn't seem to, because if there are two medicines and mine is 300 and yours is 300, we look at each other and say, wow, doesn't make sense for either of us to drop it to $50, does it?
Well, there's a new drug made by Novartis called Xolair.
Right.
Why is it so expensive?
Well, that's a completely different class of drugs. It's a biological, and those tend to be they're new. You know, the production is much more complicated. There's a lot of research and development involved. On the other hand, you know, the question is, will consumers be pushed to use this very expensive version, which our system does? You know, there's advertising for Xolaire, when in fact, when you look at other countries, Xolaire exists, but it's only approved for use in people who failed all the different inhalers. It is not; it's an injection drug. It's very expensive.
And the British have decided not to even sell it as part of their healthcare system.
Yeah, for a while they said they weren't going to sell it at all. Now there's a special approval process, and if someone has failed all the other kinds of inhalers, but the inhalers work really, really well. So the number of people who need to move to that next step is, you know, it's not zero, but it's really, really small.
Well, Big Pharma sets the prices, but then there are also middlemen involved, and they also help to jack up the prices?
Well, they in theory could do either. They could jack them up. They could get you a better price. They probably get you a better price than if you were dealing directly with Merck yourself, where you couldn't bargain at all. But they're not getting anywhere near down to the prices we see in other countries. And in fact, in these two-sided negotiations, part of the problems you see is that, and you see this on every health plan, and come January 1st, I promise you, many of us will be seeing this in a big way because of a lot of the negotiations that are going on. You know, if a big pharmaceutical firm and a big pharmacy purchaser has a dispute, the pharmaceutical firm will say, look, you're not paying us enough. We just won't sell to you. So suddenly that drug that you may need, that you've been on for 2 years, it's gone. And we've seen that in the U.S., this unpredictability of supply where suddenly your plan doesn't pay for something that you've taken for 5 years.
And then there are other drugs, Ativir, for example, where the price fluctuates in different parts of the country.
Well, and you know, between Rite Aid and CVS across the street, depending on what kind of deal each group, and at one pharmacy, depending on what kind of insurance you have, the price is all over the place. So every time people say, oh, you know, consumers should be better, people should be better consumers of healthcare, that's really hard to do. It's really, really hard to do. It's getting easier. There are good, wonderful sites, which I'd suggest everyone look at. There's one called goodrx.com, which can show you in your area what bargains are available, what the norm is. That will help you, but, you know, you're basically stuck with your pharmacies and your insurer.
And is it drug by – does one pharmacy tend to be less expensive, or is it a drug by drug situation? Might I want to go to CVS for this drug and Rite Aid for the other one?
Oh, yeah. It's drug by drug. It's person by person. So you may find this drug is cheap at my Target because they have a special deal. But then, oh, look, I can get my, you know, my Advair at – you know, CVS in Maplewood, New Jersey. Now, like, realistically, you're not, that would require you to call your doctor, get your prescription switched, drive to New Jersey. You know, people can't do that month to month.
You can't get that pharmacy to mail it to you?
Oh, you probably could if you had the energy to do it. But, you know, to every month for a chronic prescription, look for who's got the best deal this week. I mean, people do it, and that's why people end up sending to Canada. But it's a pretty exhausting process.
My guest is New York Times reporter Elizabeth Rosenthal. We're talking about two of her recent articles about the costs of drugs and what people are doing to get around the problem. One, the soaring cost of a simple breath. The other, as drugs costs rise, bending the law is one remedy. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Well, people write to pharmacies in Canada, for example. Does the FDA monitor the mail for prescription medications that are coming from outside the country?
Not normally. I mean, they normally do spot checks for a lot of different things, right? But after the story, I got a letter from a woman who had ordered Vagifem, which is a vaginal estrogen, from Canada, and her package of Vagifem got impounded at the LA airport. So occasionally you could be really unlucky and have your drugs impounded. I haven't heard of anyone being prosecuted for that.
Well, I'm not sure whether we have a call from a listener who goes to Canada for his drugs. Mm-hmm. David from Manhattan?
Actually, I don't go to Canada. Oh. I live in France 5 months a year. And I'll just give you a simple indication. I suffer from migraines, and there is a fairly new drug on the market called Maxalt. Maxalt, my copay with my insurance is, for two tablets, is $80.
Wow.
If I want to buy, and the maximum dose for a bad migraine is two tablets, so I suppose I'm out of luck if I get more than one migraine in a month. Hmm. In France, where I live 5 months of the year, I just take my prescription to Paris to a friend who is a pharmacist. I get exactly the same drug, the same pharmaceutical company, the same packaging. The only difference is the instructions are in French, not in English, but it's identical.
And how much are you paying?
32 euros.
Okay, so it's still not cheap.
But a dozen pills.
Oh, so you probably stock up and bring about 100 pills back to the United States every time you come here.
No, I mean, the point is it costs $40 for the same thing that costs $480 in the United States, which is a joke, and it's exactly the same medication.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I want to move on to the Affordable Care Act. We don't have a lot of time.
Okay.
You said that part of the deal on getting that passed was that we are not going to try to get the pharmaceutical companies to lower drug prices. So what's going to be the situation there? Is it actually going to lead to higher drug prices?
Well, I think we're in for a time of drug pricing chaos. I think pharmacies are going to start offering more and more of these special deals. You see a lot of drug coupons being offered online, you know, so people will have to try and shop around. But I think ultimately we need to make a big national decision about where we're going, because all of the forces now are inflationary in terms of drug pricing.
This has also led to scams. I regularly get offers to buy drugs on the internet. Usually it winds up in my spam mail, but there's no guarantee that you're going to get the drug that you have ordered and paid still a significant amount of money for.
Right. And that's the concern the FDA has about allowing imports. You know, many of the drug sites that are on the internet are not legitimate. They're not pharmacies. They're scams. So you have to be a little careful about where you buy from. There's something called pharmacychecker.com, which vets overseas pharmacies, which many people have told me is very useful. And other people have said, and a lot of the people I hear from significantly who are buying medicines from overseas are physicians or healthcare professionals. And I think that's because they feel more competent to vet whether this drug is actually the same as the one their doctor prescribed.
Why do you think there isn't more of an outcry?
Well,
I'm sure that if enough people started complaining, doctors and patients and pharmacies, that some pressure would be felt by members of Congress and we might have some new legislation.
Well, I think the pharmaceutical industry spends a lot of money lobbying, and I think there is a great outcry, but it mostly happens at, you know, at hundreds of thousands of pharmacies when the pharmacist hands you a prescription and says, that'll be $120, and people go, what? You know, if you could collect those individual outcries, it would be really loud. I've never seen responses I have to this kind of article, you know, there's no ballot or initiative that says, I'm sick of paying these prices. And it's about your health. If you need that inhaler, you're going to do what you have to or risk your health. And I think that's really the problem. So how to take these and turn it into a collective outcry? The problem is there's not a really good mechanism for that in our system.
Elizabeth Rosenthal's series is Paying Till It Hurts. The two articles we've been discussing are The Soaring Cost of a Simple Breath and As Drug Costs Rise, Bending the Law is One Remedy. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you.